Welcome, everybody, to the Boiler Alert Podcast. With you, as always, I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Ryan Bonaparte.
And we are coming to you today. Sunday night, we're recording. The Final Four is set. That is what we're going to spend the majority of this podcast talking about, just kind of the NCAA tournament in general, wrapping it back around to Purdue, obviously, who's not in the Final Four. But you all know that already. So we're going to just talk about that and focus kind of on the NCAA tournament as a whole and where we kind of see Purdue's future in it. So that is going to be the bulk of the podcast. But first, Ryan, I've got a question for you. It is non-sports related. We kind of went away from these during the bulk of basketball season because there's just so much going on. We didn't want to waste much time, but I think I've got a fairly decent one for you considering what today is. Are you ready?
Yep, I enjoy questions.
Okay. So, for those who are big into television, tonight is the return of Succession. The fourth and final season of Succession begins tonight. Starts in about an hour. So, my question for you is, what is the best HBO original series?
Okay. Well, I will preface this with, I have never seen Succession.
Okay, that's fine.
So, I think I have to be that guy, and I think I have to go Game of Thrones.
Okay. It's a good, I mean,
Until the last season.
Yeah, the last season had a lot of problems.
Right.
Yeah, mostly I think the writers were like, we have $100 million offer from this other place. I think it was like Netflix or something. So let's just wrap this up. We got one season. Let's just figure this out and move on. But yeah, the last season had a lot of problems. But man, for those other seasons, that was quite a ride. One of the most fun television shows I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
For sure.
Which house were you rooting for?
See, it changed every episode.
Oh, mine never changed. Oh no.
Mm. I mean, I really enjoyed House Stark.
Yeah, I mean, I was House Stark 100% from episode one forward.
It's always the Warner Brothers properties that make you divide into houses.
Yeah, I
Harry
guess that's
Potter
true.
And them,
I guess that's true.
And whatnot. I mean, really, that was such good television all the way up until like the Battle of the Bastards, and then, I know the Red Wedding. Everyone was either super surprised by or just. They were one of those people. I already read the book. I know what happens, but
that was just devastating for me. Like there was no doubt about it. And at that point, I had not read the books. I've read the books now, but they're not all done because George R. R. Martin writes at a snail's pace, and it's been like 11 years, I think, since his the last book came out. And he's just like, oh, I write a couple pages a day, and you know, and it's like, man, what are you doing? I think Stephen King has written like 13 books in the time that he has been working on this one. So I don't know, it's just wild. let's see. For me, I preface this just like you said, you've never seen Succession. I have not made it all the way through The Wire yet. Which is especially egregious because I went to law school in Baltimore, where The Wire is set, and the creator of The Wire actually came to our law school to talk about like police investigation and stuff like that. And I've never gotten all the way through it. The first few episodes of The Wire that I've seen are so slow. And everybody's like, okay, you got to push through the first few episodes, and then it gets a lot better. But I've never kind of taken the time to sit down and do that. So for me, I think the best one I'll have to go with is probably The Sopranos. I think is, you know, just fantastic from start to finish. The ending is, you know, questionable. Just I don't think they needed to end it with the weird fade to black, and you don't know what happens. But overall, I think that was a great one. I think some sleepers, of mine would be, The Righteous Gemstones, which is on there now. Just one of the absolute funniest shows, you'll ever see. Vice Principals is also a great one. That was a very short-lived show, but it was one of those, like, they had it planned out, they did the seasons, they did the episodes they wanted, and then they just kind of left. And then the only other one I want to mention for sure is the limited series they just did about Watchmen, which I thought was absolutely fantastic as someone who loved the graphic novel and loved the Zack Snyder movie. I know it's divisive to say you love anything Zack Snyder these days because of the whole DCEU fandom going nuts, but I'm not one of those people. But I just love the Watchmen graphic novel and the movie, and I thought the TV show was so well done. And it was Damon Lindelof what was the show where everybody like disappeared, where like they had the rapture, The Leftovers. Yeah. That show.
I know
was
there's like
too.
The Leftovers, one was like The 100.
Yeah.
Just there's so many apocalyptic shows now.
Yeah, a lot of them. And I guess I do want to say one more special shout out to Curb Your Enthusiasm. One of the funniest shows on television. So kudos to Larry David there. So is there any other ones that you can think of?
I think The Last of Us has potential.
Yeah. The Last of Us was good. I read that book too after the show was over because it was so good. The book and mm-hmm. the show.
Yeah, and then the other one that I enjoyed, or at least the beginning, I didn't really make it through all of it just because I had so much going on, was Silicon Valley.
Yeah, Silicon Valley is very good. I actually just finished that not long ago because, like you, I got through, I think, the first 4 or 5 seasons, and then it just kind of fell off my radar, and I didn't finish the last two. So I went back and watched it, and it's finishes pretty strong, so... kudos to them for sticking the landing. Veep is another one that did a really good job of staying good all the way through and not overstaying its welcome. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, just one of the best comedic actors of all time. Yep. All time. So
now that brings up a secondary question for me to you. Have you watched both episodes of Ted Lasso?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. You got to double check. You know, you got to make sure you're on point on that.
Yes.
One. Oh, it's so good.
It is very good. It is very good. And I really liked the last one. I mean, I've liked both of them. There's not been an episode of Ted Lasso that I have not liked.
Right.
But the last one with Rebecca, you know, finding herself and growing a pair, as she said, I think in one point in that episode, was really great with the transfer. Coming to AFC Richmond. So just what a great show. And I have to say, there is no show on television or streaming that has made me, I think, cry more than Ted Lasso. Like, just absolutely guts me, just like twice a season.
So do you have like a set, like weekly, you know, what you're watching every week, like new shows coming out?
I mean, some of them, but like Ted Lasso I watch every day when it comes out.
Because, religiously, yeah.
Yeah, I like, as soon as my wife comes down from putting our son to bed, I'm like, I've already got the TV on, it's already set up to Apple TV Plus, and I'm ready to go.
Yep.
And then, likewise, we watch The Mandalorian, but The Mandalorian and Ted Lasso come out on the same day, so I always choose Ted Lasso first, sorry, Mando, and then if we're still awake, then we watch The Mandalorian.
There you go.
But most of what we watch is on streaming. So it's like some of them, you know, they dump a whole season on you at once. Some of them it's a week to week, but it's so hard to stay up with. I mean, I've got a whole note on my phone of shows to catch up on. We just finished Our Flag Means Death on HBO.
Okay.
And then now we're going to start the final season of His Dark Materials, which I'm not really that into, but my wife really wants to finish it because she loved the books. But, you know, what about you?
Currently, my girlfriend and I yesterday, we just started the fourth and newest season of You on Netflix.
Okay.
So that can be a creepy show.
My wife watches that one without me. I watched like one episode and I was like, I don't think this is for me. I was like,
my girlfriend got
like, you
me
can
into
watch it.
So yeah, she got me into it and I started to like it. So I picked it up at the second season. She had already watched the first, so we watched rewatched the first, gotcha. And then we've watched each season since. And then I also watched the new season of Outer Banks on Netflix.
I have heard of that, but I have no idea of what that show is.
Teenage treasure hunting is the best I can give it, but it's a little more like, it's a little more edgy than, say, a National Treasure, because it's Netflix versus Disney Plus.
Well, yeah.
So I also watched the new National Treasure show. I thought they did a very good job with that as well.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one either, but I'm sure that would be good. That's one I probably should add to my list, to be honest. But man, it's just there's just so much out there to watch, and it's almost impossible to keep up with.
There's like 8 different streaming streams you can have.
Yeah. So there we go. That's kind of a catch up on what we're watching, as well as some of the greatest shows of all time. So we're gonna take a brief break here. Come back, talk NCAA tournament. And we are back. So as promised, we're going to spend the rest of the episode talking about the NCAA tournament. Ryan, the Final Four was set today, just about an hour ago. Those who for some reason might not know, can you give me an update of who found themselves in the Final Four this year? Who is heading to Houston, where us Purdue fans hoped we would be, but we'll be on our couches instead?
Yeah, so yesterday, 2 teams punched their tickets. They were out of Purdue's region, Florida Atlantic, because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that happened.
And then you had a UConn team, who is the last highest remaining seed as a 4 seed, just absolutely obliterated Gonzaga.
Yeah, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, it was a 30 burger at one, or a 30 piece at one point on top of them. So it was not pretty. Then today, good old San Diego State, the Kawhi Leonard alma mater, defeated Creighton to get to the Final Four, because that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone through and looked at everybody's bracket in the Hammer and Rails bracket challenge, but I would be absolutely shocked. If anybody had San Diego State versus Creighton in the Elite Eight.
I would be shocked if anybody had more than one of the Final Four correct.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And that's given UConn.
Right.
So, and then the latest game is Miami decided to go and beat Texas. So, Nigel Pack chose the Final Four team.
Yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah. I mean, he might have helped make them a final. Well, not might have. He helped make them a Final Four team, got himself a heck of a lot of money, and he made the right choice. You know, he proved that. So, really stinks for Purdue. But I mean, it's just the nature of college basketball right now. My brother just sent me this, literally as we were recording. Since Purdue last made the Final Four in 1980. How many teams do you think have made the Final Four?
Like, for the first time?
No. Just how many individual teams in those, 43 years have been in the Final Four?
Well, it's a maximum of 172, so I'm going to go with 64.
That is really close. 56.
Okay.
56. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of teams who've made it multiple times. You go down the list. UConn has made it 6. Kansas is 10. North Carolina, 14. Duke, 13. Michigan State, 7. That one, of course, drives us crazy. IU, 3 times. Arizona, 4 times. I mean, there's a lot of teams who have been there with some regularity, but, it's
3 first-timers this season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important to emphasize, because it just shows you how absolutely wild this college basketball season has been, and particularly how wild this NCAA tournament has been, because not a single 1 seed made it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
And that's
first
the first time.
Since 79?
What's that?
First time since 79?
No, all no, with 0 teams being ranked number, with 0, excuse me, with 0 1 seeds making it to the Elite Eight, that has never happened. in the NCAA tournament. Okay, they might have
started. Yeah, I think they started tracking.
Yeah, well, at least 79. Since the NCAA tournament began seeding teams in 1979. So, okay. In essence, gotcha. since they've done it. But, man, yeah. No one seeds in Elite Eight. And it just goes to show you with these teams, as you said, three of the four in the Final Four, making it for the first time in school history. It just goes to show you how, two things, I think, how difficult it is to make it to the Final Four, mm-hmm. and how much parity there is in college basketball right now.
Absolutely. And I think almost another sub point is the importance of guard play.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of been shown with these four teams, is they rely so very heavily on their guards. And yeah, usually big man U doesn't fare very well for these teams in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the Big Ten, of course, the Big Ten has not had a national champion since Michigan State in 2000. Mm-hmm. I believe that game was in Detroit. And I remember that because the Final Four logo had like a tire in it. Mm-hmm. It was okay. Weird. And the reason, or one of the reasons, everyone always says is that guard play in the Big Ten is just not where things are focused on. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to argue that, because you look at Purdue. Big man every single year for the last, 8 to 9 to 10 years, maybe even longer. Probably since like 2007. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the best player on IU. He was probably listed as a forward, but Trace Jackson Davis, really a big man. Michigan, Hunter mm-hmm. Dickinson. Can you name me the best guard on Michigan State? And how does he stack up against the guards from Miami? How does he stack up against the guards from UConn or from Texas or from Kansas? And I don't know if the Big Ten comes out favorably in any of those comparisons.
Most not. I think your closest bet was Penn State with Pickett and Lundy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I mean, Pickett is, but Pickett's just not a true, a true guard. He can back down and play in the post as well. It's really, you need the ball handling and shot creators yeah. in the tournament yeah. that can, I've said this several times, but it unfortunately reigns true. You need a Kemba. You need someone who can pull a Kemba. And if you get that.
For those that don't remember Kemba Walker or remember what he did, explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, Kemba Walker almost single-handedly willed his team to a national championship just by absolutely, he would give me the ball, I am going to get a shot up, and I'm going to make a basket.
Yeah.
It was his game, and he made it his game.
Yeah, every game in that tournament, too. And mm-hmm. and it was in the Big East tournament, he did the same thing.
Yes.
I mean, he carried that team for something like 8 or 9 games in a row. I can't remember how many games they mm-hmm. had in the Big East tournament, but they were not a favorite in that Big East tournament, if I'm remembering correctly. And
they were the 3 or 4 seed in that tournament.
Okay, and he just willed them to victory game after game because he was so talented, and he wasn't afraid to take a shot. He wasn't afraid to basically take over a game and say, "Damn mm-hmm. my teammates, I'm doing this." And right now you're just getting in my way.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, sticking even with UConn, the same thing happened with Shabazz Napier.
Yeah.
Who brought them that far. So, again, it's the guard play in this team. I mean, if you watch this Miami game against Texas, it was truly, it was Miller on Miami. He shot, I believe, 9 of 9 from the field. And like 11 of 11 from free throw.
Yeah, he was incredible. He was incredible.
Yeah. So if you just have a guard who can create his own shot and just not even open up his teammates, sometimes that doesn't matter. Like, it obviously always helps, but sometimes you just need the guy who can be the guy.
Yeah.
And
So to your point,
difficult in the Big Ten.
To your point, Miller, Jordan Miller from Miami in this game, he played 39 minutes. Mm-hmm. He was 7 of 7 from the floor. Okay. 13 of 13 from the free throw line, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, and 1 turnover. Led them with 27 points. In fact, led all scorers on both teams. So, mm-hmm. I mean, to have a guy who goes 7 for 7, doesn't miss a free throw, 39 minutes, and he's hitting these free throws at the end of the game when his legs had to have just been drained after playing mm-hmm. 39 minutes. And he just, free throw after free throw, just salted the game away as Texas was trying to do everything they could to claw their way back. And as it stands right now, I don't know that anyone in the Big Ten has a guard who can do those things, whether it be Kemba Walker or Jordan Miller like that from Miami. And that's, I think, what makes last year's loss to St. Peter's hurt so much worse, is because it felt like Purdue had that guy. You know, Jaden Ivey, you know, gets one of the top draft picks in the NBA, has scored something like 1,000 points already in the NBA this year. Is that right? Did I make that up?
I know he's averaging about 15.4 a game.
I feel like I just saw that. He hit a 3 to make his 1,000th point. I mean, it felt like we had the guy who was going to be able to take over a game when we needed it. And yes, Jaden Ivey.
And he did a few times.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey became the fourth rookie in Detroit Pistons franchise history to score 1,000 points and also record 300 assists and 250 rebounds in his rookie season. So kudos to him. I mean, that's a hell of an accomplishment. But, when it takes so much to go right for you to win the NCAA tournament, hell, even to get to the Final Four, and one-off game by your star guard can send you packing. And that's what happened against St. Peter's. Jaden Ivey did not have a great game, and Purdue found themselves unable to compensate for that. No one really could step up. No one else was hitting shots. And when you rely on a guy like Ivey to take over in those games when nobody else is being able to do anything, if he has an off game, you're in trouble. And that's what happened to Purdue. Now, this year was a completely different thing because Purdue was relying on freshman guards, which is always a terrifying prospect going into March. But I think, like a lot of other people, I felt that Purdue would be able to compensate for that with Zach Edey, with someone like David Jenkins Jr., who had so much experience in the tournament and throughout his career. But unfortunately, everything went wrong in that game, and no one stepped up to hit those tough shots. And that's how you lose in March. You don't have anybody who you can trust to truly take over at the guard position. And Purdue had no one to do that. And unless they fix that going forward, I'm afraid that it's going to be the same time and time again.
And to answer your question, sort of, when it comes to what Big Ten team has that guard, the answer is honestly probably in Bloomington, but that guard's not going to be there next season. Jalen Hood-Schifino, if he was a senior, could be that guy.
Yeah.
But he will not be a senior at Indiana. He will be an NBA draft pick.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I've not seen anything definitive, but I can't imagine he's coming back next year.
I mean, he's going to be a lottery pick. It's easy. He has the mid-range game that translates directly to the NBA level. So, why wouldn't you go and chase that money?
Oh, no, absolutely. Especially since
Trace Jackson Davis isn't coming back. Like, no. Yeah. So,
I don't begrudge any player who leaves early to go make money because they may never have that opportunity again. So kudos to them.
Yep, for sure. But yeah, there's that guard play in the Big Ten is just not there. It's not on the same level. And I don't know if it's the coaches just not wanting to adapt or what, but we can say it's officiating, not letting the style of play happen. But again, even if you have this perfect officiating, the guard play is just not on the same level as the SEC, the ACC, and even the Big 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you saw one of the teams in the Elite Eight today. Marcus Carr was doing well. He used to play for Minnesota, but obviously he left after his freshman year, and he made a big difference on Texas's team. It's just that is not the way the games go for the Big Ten. It's always rock fights.
Yeah. I mean, I know historically that is how the Big Ten is played because historically that's how basketball was played. You know,
right.
And up until like the 2000s, you threw it to a big man, you had a couple perimeter shooters, and every now and then there was an outrageous guard who would take things over. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you take these Purdue teams of the last 10 years and transport them back 40, 50 years, Purdue's winning a few national titles. I mean, but the
UCLA
game...
UCLA in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not the game anymore. And the Big Ten has been like, nah, we're good. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing. And they've stuck with the same style of play, and it is not serving them well in March. Short of, I mean, you know, the Big Ten has had a lot of teams get to the Final Four. But as I said, no one has won since Michigan State in 2000. And at a certain point, it becomes something that other schools, other conferences, other coaches can use against Big Ten recruiting, you know, to say, you know, you might want to go there, but no one has won a big or no one has won a national title in over 20 years. Here, you know, you can at least get a chance, blah blah blah. And I wonder if the reputation of the Big Ten is going to be used against them.
Right. Yeah. It's unfortunate, and it's the way. Also, it feels like the Big Ten doesn't bring in the same kind of athletes. Like, everyone knows it in football. The SEC is known for bringing in the best athlete. I think the Big Ten's starting to get to that point, too, where only one or two schools are bringing in your top-tier players. And you almost wonder if it has a domino effect. And, you know, to your point, if it's being used against them, what do you do? How do you get out of that rut? So, unfortunately, the person who's been best at breaking the Big Ten mold has been Tom Izzo.
Yeah. Speaking of, I want to correct myself before we get it in the comments. The 2000 national title that Michigan State won was in Indianapolis. They were also in the 2009 Final Four, which had the Tiger logo and was in Detroit.
Okay.
I had to look that up because I was like, I know they were in the one that had the Tiger logo, but I could not remember. But that was 2009. But yeah, I mean, it goes to your point that you can overcome it if you have a coach like Tom Izzo. And I don't know what Tom Izzo's magic is in the month of March, but I mean, the way he turns it on is just absolutely crazy. He gets to the Final Four with teams who Purdue's beaten twice, who Purdue has absolutely dominated, and he just turns it on and figures out a way to get there. It is crazy.
When's the last time a Big Ten team has played in the national championship?
The last time a Big Ten team was in the national title game was 2018. Michigan lost to Villanova, and it wasn't particularly close. 79-62. And then before that was a very good game, Duke versus Wisconsin in 2015, 68-63. And then we go back 2013, which was vacated because of Rick Pitino at Louisville, but Louisville beat Michigan 82-76.
That was Spike. That was Spike's game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the Big Ten has.
I went to the same high school.
Big Ten has gotten there. But just cannot pull through.
So
there's one more question that this kind of brings up, and we talked about it on the site. You know, Purdue has Miles Colvin coming in next year. He's the only signed recruit. We also have a few guys coming off of red shirts who we hope maybe can be difference makers. It's always tough to say when a guy has been redshirting for a year and you haven't really got to see how they've been improving or how they've been excelling in that process. But we've got those guys coming in. We don't really know if Zach Edey is going to come back. So the whole complexion of the team might be different next year, depending on if Edey returns or not. But the transfer portal is the way of life in college athletics at this time. So what do you think Purdue and Matt Painter need to be out there looking for? I'm not asking for specific names. I'm just saying, who do they need to be looking for as a player? A shooter, a scorer, somebody who can drive, a backup point guard, extra height? I mean, what do we need?
Yeah, so I had struggled with this when we talked about it for our round table. And the problem is, it all comes down to whether or not Edie returns.
Yeah.
But either way, I think if Edie is gone, you still have Kaufman Wren first, and now Willie Berg's going to be coming in. So at least you have, like, a true center in Berg. Mm-hmm. Mind you, he'll be a redshirt freshman, but, you know, sometimes you have to live and die by that. What I truly want them to get outside of ball, just people who can handle the ball and create their own shot, those are kind of a dime a dozen now, it seems. I wouldn't mind some 3-and-D guys. Just people who can switch on defense and actually cover 4 of the 5 positions and make an impact so that when you have someone switch with Zach Edey, it's not a mismatch on both ends. Like, you can have one mismatch, but not two. I think we saw this happen a lot with Fletcher Lawyer. He would switch and they would just absolutely attack Fletcher Lawyer. I would like to avoid that. And again, it all comes down to, can the outside shooters on Purdue make their shots?
Yeah.
They are more than capable. They have all the accolades you could ever want for outside shooting. It's just a matter of whether or not they make their shot. I'm hoping with more experience, especially for the freshmen, those sort of things start to work themselves out.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a player like Mason Gillis this season who, in their last game, didn't make shots, and he's a, career 40% three shooter? It's like, they didn't show their best effort. We know that. They didn't show their best game in this game. Okay. But moving forward, I'd love to see them really use their roles and sort of play directly into their roles. If they do that, they're golden. You see the top level basketball they can play when they played in Portland. If you're all doing your job and playing into your roles, you're fine. But you have to make open shots. You have to not be afraid to drive the ball. You cannot just stand outside on the perimeter in a motion offense that Matt Painter runs.
Yeah.
So that's a long-winded way to answer your question, but yeah.
No, but I mean, it's a good answer. It's a good answer. Yeah. So
ball handlers first, and then 3-and-D guys.
I think one of the things I said is I want somebody who can create their own shot off the dribble. I hope that Miles Colvin is going to be that guy when he comes in. But again, it comes back to the same problem that Purdue will be relying on freshman guards. If Purdue could find a guy, maybe as a grad transfer, maybe as someone who's immediately eligible, you know, with the portal, as a junior or a senior, who can come in and has shown an ability to break down the defense and is maybe, you know, jumping up a level or wanting to go to a major conference. That, to me, is something that this team is lacking. But to kind of reiterate what you said, the biggest improvement this team will see next year is the improvement from the freshmen to now being sophomores. Can Fletcher Lawyer and can Braden Smith make a jump to that next level? Because if they do, it changes what the team is capable of. And we need them to really step up and be leaders on this team, because they are the guards on this team. They're going to be in starting roles seemingly for 4 years. And eventually it will be their team. And if Zach Edey goes, it might be their team next year. We don't know. But those are the two guys that are almost absolutely pivotal for this Purdue team. Mm-hmm. So that is really what I'm looking
for. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, national title is a week away. I know I'll be watching, but, you know, there's certainly a little part of me that's still disgruntled and doesn't really have my whole heart into watching, but it shows you that the March Madness is always going to have its hooks in me, even when Purdue gets heartbreak, as they have the last three seasons. So I assume you're going to watch as well, Ryan. You're going to be glued to the TV.
Yeah. Yeah, just maybe not super glue this year. Maybe some Elmer's glue.
There you go. Not like Gorilla Glue.
Right, exactly.
Good, that makes sense. That makes sense. So there we go, folks. There's our look at the NCAA tournament, the Big Ten's problems, and what Purdue needs to do going forward. So thanks so much for giving us a listen this week. We will be back next week. Boiler up.
Hammer down.